Tonight, Stephen Grenade joins us to talk about the 12th annual Interactive Fiction Competition. Plus, we go sneaking around with the King to offer up tasty burgers made up of awesome and win. All that in your live calls and chat comments on the Bobby Blackwolf Show, week of October 8th, 2006. Bobby Blackwolf Show, you're on the air.
Calling in to chime in about this, Matt. And
it's your fault, Doc Wolf. It's you guys who buy these dumb Katamari, Kamari, Catalarm, that game.
Bobby Blackwolf, back at Dragon Con 2005. I am here at Anime Weekend Atlanta 11. I'm here at the Best Buy in Alpharetta, Georgia, talking about the Xbox 360 launch.
DC Nate and everybody in chat's all going, we didn't buy into the hype. You did buy into the hype, you just didn't buy the system.
From a little room in Atlanta, Georgia, it's Bobby Blackwolf.
I didn't mess it up, yay! Actually, I did mess it up. Hello, everybody, and welcome to yet another edition of the Bobby Blackwolf Show, where we discuss the current news affecting the video game industry, as well as reminisce about gaming's history. My name is Bobby Blackwolf. If you are listening to us live here on All Games Radio, welcome. You can join us in our chat room, chat.allgames.com. I will be reading comments from chat all throughout tonight's show, especially during our first segment that we're going to be doing tonight. Later on in the show, we will be opening up our phone lines. You can give us a call on our toll-free number, 1-866-880-0156, or you can call us on Skype, on our Skype line, Bobby Blackwolf Show, all one word. About that phone number, it is toll-free in the United States and Canada. If you're listening to the podcast, you can leave us a voicemail on that Skype line, Bobby Blackwolf Show, or you can email us at blackwolf@allgames.com, and you might hear your email read on the air. And as always, I want to thank Kropotkin for providing the short UK news segment that runs just before the show goes live. It's available as a podcast feed for those who cannot tune in live. Check it out on his website, kropotkin.co.uk. You can find that link and many others discussed tonight on our website, BobbyBlackwolfShow.com. And I want to give a special hello to our new listeners via XB Stream, which is the RSS reader for the Xbox 360. It works over Xbox Media Connect or Windows Media Center, and you can have podcasts delivered to your Xbox 360 that way. We are now one of the default feeds starting in version 1.3. Big thanks to PG4 for that. And also, if you heard us on Cross Platform, which was a gaming podcasting roundtable that I took part in. It's done by Luke Stapley over at Game Addict Hotline, one of our new affiliates. I had the honor of being there with Tom Kim from GDC Radio, Philip Kohler from Evil Avatar Radio, and MC Wilson from Broadcast Gamer, and as well as with Luke, and so that was a lot of fun. But I want to go ahead and jump right into this interview. We have a live interview tonight. I want to talk about an art form that is one of the really truly niche areas of computer gaming. The term they use is interactive fiction. And what it really is, it's the evolution of a text adventure game. So if you want to look at it that way, you can, but it's a lot more than that. We have come a long way from you are standing in an open field west of a White House with a boarded front door. There's a small mailbox here. And now there are amazing stories to be told. The 12th annual interactive fiction competition has recently begun its voting period. And on the line, we have the organizer of this year's competition, Stephen Grenade. Stephen, how you doing today?
Doing really well. How about you?
I'm doing good. So first off, can you explain what interactive fiction is today compared to the Infocom games that we're probably familiar with?
Sure. In a lot of ways, it's similar. If you pull down most recent interactive fiction and start playing it, it's going to look a lot like the Infocom games of old, in that it's going to be pretty much all text. You type in English or near-English commands to tell the game what you want to do, and you go through the game. What really has changed is that interactive fiction has branched out in a lot of different ways. And what I mean by that is you've got games that explore more artistic, more experimental ideas. We've had games that only last one turn. That is, you have one command, and part of the game is trying to figure out what you're supposed to do in that one turn. What Infocom and a lot of the early interactive fiction companies were doing was trying to sell games. So what they would do is try to find things that were commercially viable. And so what's happened since all of those companies have sort of crumbled into dust is amateurs like myself have taken that over. And since in the most cases you're not going to get any money for interactive fiction, with very few exceptions, it's something that you do because you're interested in it, because you have a love for it. So you're free to try all kinds of different things. Now, that's not to say that it's all text. We've also had a fair number of games in recent years that have started incorporating various images. Sometimes it's like the old text and graphic adventures that you would see from companies like Legend, where you would have a picture depicting whatever room. But people have also experimented with doing sort of mood paintings that go to appear at different points in the story. So there's a lot of different things happening sort of under the umbrella of interactive fiction.
So have you guys ever started sending out scratch and sniff stickers?
Not yet, although there is an organization to put things like that together for games, Feelies.org, Feelies being the term for all those neat things that you used to get in or the scratch and sniff stickers and things like that. And so there have been some folks who have written the games and released them for free, and then you pay a nominal fee to get a manual and whatever little trinkets are appropriate for the game. And that's been a really cool thing to do.
Now, if people in chat want to send a question, just send me a private message. I'm Black Wolf in the chat at chat.allgames.com, and we'll pass them along and ask them. So one of the interesting things about interactive fiction is that the community is still pretty much based in Rec Arts and Fiction, which is a Usenet news group. Do you think this has helped the community by it being harder for idiots to come find it, or does it hurt by not being newbie-friendly?
Well, I certainly think it has its pluses and its minuses. And in fact, every once in a while, there will be a discussion on this Usenet news group about, well, should it still be based in Usenet? Should we be looking at a web forum? Should we be doing something like that? And the answer is usually, well, you know, sure, we can give it a try. And typically what happens is somebody starts up a web forum, but the community never really migrates over. And I think in part that's because Usenet offers you features that you do not get in traditional web-based forums. For one thing, there is no central point of failure. There is no one website that if it goes down, oh, you can't get to it anymore. For another thing, there's a very long memory because all of these messages are archived and companies like Google make them available all the way back to the beginning. So you can read the kind of conversations that people were having back in 92, 93, 94 if you're really brave. And most Usenet readers give you the ability to do kill files, that is, you decide, hey, this poster's an idiot, all they're doing is trolling, boot, you never have to see them again. The big problem is that barrier of entry. It's not as familiar to people as, you know, going to a BBB kind of bulletin board. So I think there are advantages to it, both technologically and for the fact that a community is formed around it that is very solid and has not gone away and continues to go forward, even though you've now got people joining who weren't born when companies like Infocom were turning out interactive fiction.
So let's now talk about some of these games that the community have put out. If I wanted to play one of these games, do I need any special tools?
Yes. What's happened is when Infocom wrote their games, they did not write them the way that most game companies do. They used what's called an interpreter. So the idea is you write your game and you compile it to sort of a middle state. So you can imagine, for example, a Java program. You compile it to Java bytecode, and then anybody who has a Java interpreter sitting on their computer can play that. Well, that's exactly what Infocom was doing, only they were doing it, you know, 15 years earlier. So we've carried that forward. Pretty much all of the games are written in these platform-independent packages. And so what happens is you download an interpreter, a program for your specific computer that can then run any and all of those independent, platform-independent games that you download.
And actually, I do have a question that kind of goes back to the last one. Clef5 wants to ask, how would one go to connecting to Usenet to get to the community?
The easiest way is to go to Google Groups, groups.google.com. That gives you a web portal to all of the Usenet news groups out there, at least the ones that are trafficking in legal traffic. If you go to groups.google.com and in the first search box type rec, R-E-C, dot arts, A-R-T-S, dot intfiction, I-N-T-F-I-C-T-I-O-N, that should lead you to that Usenet news group. And what I would suggest is go and read some of the discussions that are going on there. You know, take a day or two to sort of get a feel for the lay of the land and see what the news group is like. I think that's a good starting point, and for a lot of people, that's all they ever need. If you later decide that you'd like to move into some of the more advanced features of Usenet, then there are a number of good news readers out there.
Okay, so let's say I wanted to create a game. What do I need, and really, do I need any programming experience?
There are tools that cover the whole gamut from people who have never programmed before to people who are truly used to professional programming environments. There are a number of different tools out there. They're essentially specialized programming languages. You could write interactive fiction in, you know, in C, in Java, in Python, in any of these things. But what a number of people have done is create specialized languages that make the task a lot easier and that tend to come with libraries that describe basic behavior of the game world. Because if you're going to start and write one of these yourself out of, say, C, first you're going to have to come up with a way of parsing the player's command, that is, take the input that the player has typed and figure out just what the hey they're trying to do. You've got to have something that models the world, that is, something that says this is an object, it's a Coke can, and inside it is a liquid that you're going to be able to drink, and it's sitting on a table, and you can put things on the table. And that gets really complex. So it's nice that you can get tools that do all of that early heavy lifting for you. Now, the tools have gone in a couple of different directions, and I'm going to name a couple of the more popular ones. There's one called Adrift, A-D-R-I-F-T, that is Windows only, and is sort of like filling out forms in a database. You say, I want a room, so you go to a form in the program and say, click, I've got a room, and it's going to have an exit to the north, and here are the objects that are in the room, and I'm going to fill out forms to create those objects. So it's very programming light, and it does have a specialized macro language to do more complex things, but is really geared towards getting you to create that first game as quickly as possible. Another interesting tool is something called Inform 7. It's designed to be sort of a literary programming language. So you program your game sort of like you would in any other program. You're going to be typing in text. But rather than doing more traditional programming, you describe it in English sentences. So you can say there is a room called the Arboretum. The Arboretum is north of, you know, and describe it in English sentences like that. Going to sort of the other extreme, there's a tool called TADS 3. TADS is the Text Adventure Development System. And TADS 3 is fully object-oriented. It looks like sort of Java on steroids. It's got garbage collection. It's got a lot of advanced features. It's got a debugger. So that tends to attract the people who are more used to traditional high-end professional programming.
Okay, so that's actually kind of interesting because this kind of brings up the question, who do you think would have an easier time creating an interactive fiction game, someone with game development experience or someone with more fiction writing experience?
I've talked to some people who come from both backgrounds, and I think it's not a clear win in either direction. Certainly someone with programming experience is going to better be able to handle thinking like the computer thinks and thinking the kind of logical structures that you really need to put a program together and make sure that the logic fits. But someone who has more experience with writing fiction is going to be better able to write the descriptions for the objects, to be thinking of the story as a whole and driving the plot forward. So I think there are advantages and disadvantages to coming from either, but certainly we've had really good games come out of people who are from a programming tradition, and we've had really good games come out of people who are from a much more literary tradition.
We're talking with Stephen Grenade, who is the organizer of the 12th Annual Interactive Fiction Competition. So now I want to talk about that. How did it get started?
Well, so I'm going to go back to the dim days of 1995. That was about 6 or 7 years after Infocom had really stopped being a going concern, and there were really no companies still putting out text adventures. So you had this community of people who were saying, well, I guess we're going to have to come up with our own tools to write our own text adventures. So in early 92, 93, you had a lot of people who were working to reverse engineer Infocom's format. A little while ago I mentioned that they did something like Java where they would compile to sort of an intermediate bytecode representation that could go to any platform, and then they would have an interpreter that was computer-specific to decode that file and run it. And so there was a group of people the Infocom Task Force, who reverse engineered their virtual machine called the Z Machine. And then an Oxford mathematician named Graham Nelson created a compiler that you could program in, and it would compile to this this Z code. So you could write games that ran and looked a lot like Infocom's old games did. And, of course, at that point, the community was still very nostalgic for all of that. So that was a pretty cool thing. So around 95, Inform, which was the programming language that Graham Nelson had written, was just starting to become popular, and there weren't a lot of games written with it. So people on the Usenet newsgroup hit upon the idea, well, maybe we should have some way to encourage people to write games and release the source code. And it evolved over time into saying, well, why don't we have a competition for short games? Because at the same time, most of the people who were writing adventure games were trying to write Infocom-like games, games that would take you 30, 40, 50 hours to go through. So, all right, the guy who ended up organizing the competition said, a guy by the name of Kevin Wilson, he said, we're going to have a competition. It's for short games. They have to be playable and winnable in 2 hours or less. We'll have a division for people who are writing in Inform, and we'll have a division for people who are writing in TADS, which was the other major language that had really caught on at that time. And we'll throw it open and see what happens. And it got a fairly good response and has sort of snowballed from there.
So you're organizing it this year now. September 30th, all the nominees for this year's competition, they have been released. And you're looking for judges. Now, if someone wants to seriously help judge this year's competition, what do they have to do? And more importantly, what is the time commitment?
Sure. The first thing you should do is go to the competition webpage, which is at ifcomp.org. And what you need to do is download the games and download interpreters for your computing platform. Those are the programs that you use to run those games. We've got a package of interpreters for Windows ready to go. We've got a pointer to the major interpreter to use on Mac. There are interpreters for Linux, although as somebody who comes from the Linux community, I sort of figure if you're on Linux, you can figure out how to put it together yourself. You don't need as much hand-holding as if you're on Windows, say. The only requirement we have is that you play at least 5 games and then rate them on a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being the best, 1 being the worst, and you decide how you apply those ratings. So if you are playing 5 games, they're going to take at most 2 hours because you're asked after 2 hours to say, oh, I'm stopping and I'm rating this game right now. So you're looking at about a 10-hour commitment at a minimum. If you're going to play all 40 games, obviously that's going to take a lot longer, but hardly anybody plays all of the games and judges them. We tend to see sort of a sweet spot of game playing between 20 and 30 games.
Now, I mean, I know you can't talk about this year's games, but since this has been going on for a while, can you tell us about like just a few of the previous winners? What were the games? Who were they by? And what were they about?
Absolutely. There have been in each year's competition, you get a really wide range of games. Some people enter games that are more traditional. They're more like the Infocom games of old. You get some people who enter very puzzle-heavy games. You get some people who enter very story-oriented games. So, for example, back in, I think, 1998, there was a game called Photopia by Adam Kadri that ended up winning. And it was just a really striking story that was told with some interesting techniques borrowed from literary fiction. That ended up being extremely touching and is near the top of a lot of people's game list. In sort of the opposite direction, there's a game called All Things Devours that took a high ranking, I believe, last year. That is a very puzzle-heavy, very intricate sort of Swiss watch of a game where there are all these interlocking pieces to this one overall puzzle that you were trying to work out. We've had games like Being Andrew Plotkin by J. Robinson Wheeler that was sort of a joke for the community in that Andrew Plotkin is one of the well-known authors and tool writers in the community. And so he wrote a game that sort of riffed on Andrew Plotkin's public persona and that riffed on the Being John Malkovich movie and riffed on some of the things that you see in modern interactive fiction, and did so in a way that was just very delightful and very fun to play, even if you were not necessarily in on all of the jokes. So we've really had a wide range of good games out there. And if any of you feel like you might be interested in checking this out, but you're not sure you want to go right into the competition, what you could do is go back. We've got listed on the website all of the winners from all the past years, and go back and play, you know, for example, the top game of the last couple of competitions, top two, top three games, and that'll give you an idea of sort of what you're looking at, and you can also be looking at reviews, since judges hold off on reviewing the games until after all the scores are in. You can go back and look at the reviews from past years and see what kind of games might really tickle your fancy.
The website is ifcomp.org, ifcomp.org. Thank you very much for spending some time with us. I have one last thing. This doesn't have to really do about IF, but I think it's really cool. Several of my listeners were at DragonCon, which is here in Atlanta. I did a podcasting panel there at DragonCon, and what they probably don't know is that they most likely saw you. So can you explain what involvement you have with DragonCon and why we've probably seen you before?
Sure. I've been volunteering for a number of years on DragonCon's technical operations staff, which are the geeks who run cables and move VCRs and DVDs to different rooms and things like that. And a couple of years ago, a couple of us got involved in creating fake commercials and bumpers, which are the black and white interstitials that you see, for example, on Adult Swim, and coming up with this content to run before the big competitions, like the Masquerade and Dawn costuming contests, because a crowd that is entertained is a much more pacified crowd, and then the security people really like us. And I'm one of the few people on the staff. I actually have a theater arts degree, which means I have no sense of shame. It was burned out of me long ago, and so I'm willing to get in front of camera and make a fool out of myself. So I end up being on camera a fair amount, dressed up as Ming, dressed up as a red shirt dying, dressed up as a different red shirt dying, all those kinds of things. So we've been doing this for the last couple of years, and there's a whole collection of these clips, so you can go and see me looking really stupid at DragonConTV.com.
Thank you very much, Stephen. I've always enjoyed DragonCon TV, and there's a video podcast feed of that, so you can check out some of that work. They're really funny. Thank you for spending some time with us. Anything else you wanted to mention?
Nothing, except I hope that some of you guys will go check out the website and sign up to be judges. We'd love to have you.
Thank you very much. Stay on the line, because we're going to go take our quick music break that we usually do at the half point of the show. Last week we played The Megas. They're a band, Mega Man cover band out of Los Angeles, and they really enjoyed the fact that we played Dr. Wily last week. So this is another cut from The Megas. It's going to be also on the podcast. It's Airman here on The Bobby Blackwolf Show on All Games Radio, online at allgames.com.
Anyone who comes this way will die.
No one in this world can.
the city he will destroy. Built from airplane parts, his propeller spins as he thinks to himself. I will destroy these people.
I will fly high above Metropolis.
For I can't walk among
and
them.
And I rain terror down on the general populace.
Then I will walk the world
I
alone.
I will fly high above Metropolis.
There'll be a fire in the
and
sky.
And I rain terror down on the general populace.
And your doom will rain down.
Do you know what it's like to be there? Others away. You're a heavy roll to bear. Do you think you can carry it? I'll usher in the end upon my thunder chariot.
When Bobby Blackwolf plays Monopoly, it affects the world economy itself. Welcome back to the Bobby Blackwolf Show on All Games Radio.
And welcome back to the Bobby Blackwolf Show here on All Games Radio. Thank you, Chrisville1724, for that bumper. If you want to leave a bumper just like that, leave us a voicemail on our Skype line, Bobby Blackwolf Show, and I'll put some music behind it. You know, just say your internet name or whatever, and, you know, whatever you want to say about coming back to the Bobby Blackwolf Show. Wanted to thank you, Stephen Grenade, again, for coming on ifcomp.org Interactive Fiction Competition. So a couple things this before I go into the news this week, because our first story is just so full of awesome and win, I just want to get some of this other stuff out. A couple of people last week were wondering why I didn't talk about Halo Wars and Banjo-Kazooie. These trailers debuted at X06 in Barcelona, and they were CG movies, and that is why I didn't talk about them, because the minute that they show gameplay, then I will be more inclined to talk about them. However, one game that did actually show gameplay to some people this week is Gears of War, and it's actually gotten a mixed reaction. So, you know, that's one of those things. Some people love it, some people hate it. Some people don't think the control scheme works. Some people don't think that it's going to work out, and other people just love it. And it was definitely better than the movie, The Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Actually, we have a call right now, and I'm going to go ahead and take this call. He's been trying to call a couple times during the interview and stuff, and I'm going to go ahead and take it. Bobby Blackwell Show, you're on the air. Who is this?
This is Addie. I'm trying to have a question.
Yeah?
My boyfriend is considering a new gaming station, and he is torn between the three that are currently coming out. Right now, he loves his PlayStation 2.
Uh-huh.
But he loves, like, Star Wars, Resident Evil, particularly Resident Evil 4.
Mm-hmm.
And he's kind of torn between the PS3 and the Nintendo Wii that's coming out.
Mm-hmm.
He's not a big fan of Microsoft. What is your take on it?
Well, it really, like I keep saying, it depends on the games. And if the games that he likes are going to be on the PS3, then I would say he should get a PS3. If he's going to like the games that are on the Wii, then he should get a Wii. And it really depends on, you know, which games are exclusive, especially with, like, Resident Evil. I don't know if they're going to stick with one platform in the future or not. So it really just depends on the games.
Okay. Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. Bobby Blackwell Show on Skype, 1-866-880-0156 is our number, but we're going to hold off on that just a little bit. I'm going to go ahead and get through the rest of the first part of the news. And because I was talking about some of the stuff that came out this week, Gears of War got a mixed reaction a little bit. Now, one thing I did get to play today is Guitar Hero 2. There is a demo out now on the official PlayStation magazine. It's the first time I've picked up an OPM, and actually it's got a UMD in with it if you want to try the Killzone game for the PSP. There's a little UMD in there, and you can play it on your PSP and die as quick as I did. But Guitar Hero 2... is there's four playable songs. The only one I really cared about was YYZ by Rush, and it's one player. You only get to play the main lead guitar. You don't get to play the bass, and you don't get to try the multiplayer. But it does show, you know, some of the new UI things that they've done. It's really not much. The only really noticeable graphical thing they've done is if you lose your multiplier, like the background of where the notes scroll, so I guess the staff, it went dark for like half a second. That, and it kind of messes with you just a little bit. It messes with your mind when it immediately goes dark just because you lost your multiplayer. I'm waiting for the 360 version. Hammer-ons and pull-offs did seem a lot easier. I will say that. But also, one of the things that it reinforced is that I have a Samsung DLP TV before they fixed it, which means that I have video lag on any standard definition 480i signal. And it was readily apparent. So now I'm trying to think, you know, I'm thinking maybe now it's a good thing that it's going to come out on the Xbox 360, because I'm not going to get any video lag on the 360. And I am going to get it on the PS2. So I'm very torn if I should get the PS2 version when it comes out or wait until 2007 to get the 360 version. But I still enjoyed it, even if I couldn't play it all that well. And also, one game that I did play this week that I thought sucked, which would probably scare me since I did like the Wii. Totem Ball sucked. Totem Ball is basically, it is the free game on Xbox Live Arcade that uses the Xbox Live Vision camera. And you basically, it's kind of like the iToy Anagraph, where you hold your arms out and then you move them, and that is the way that your ball rolls. However, I kept thinking that it was going to be played like Katamari Damacy, in which you have your standard take controls. If your left arm is up and your right arm's down, you turn, or rather, you know, being able to use momentum and stuff. And it really wasn't like that. It was very, very hard to control. Plus, your arms were outstretched and you got tired. And any game that has an achievement of if you play the game for 20 minutes straight without resting, that's a bad sign. Some people liked it. The pinball was kind of fun once you figured out how to use the flippers. Essentially, the point of the game is that it's a big tribe that made pinball machines out of their villages or something. And you used these levers to be the flippers, and unfortunately they would kind of stop and be not flippy when you want them to be flippy. So I didn't enjoy it all that much. I'm glad it was free. I'm glad I didn't waste 800 points on it. I was kind of worried that it didn't come with the camera, but I guess it just came with everybody. I don't know if I'm going to enjoy games like that. I didn't enjoy them on the iToy, and I'm not going to enjoy them on the Vision. And that scares me if there's going to be a lot of arm waving on the Wii, which in the games that I played that I enjoyed, there wasn't, but it's always a possibility. But luckily, not all of the games on the Wii require the arm waving. So, the first news. It's full of awesome and win. And I just got to add this. DMN in chat says that Microsoft should have given you Microsoft points to download the thing. I agree. I wish they had given me 400 points after playing that. Full of awesome and win. This is full of awesome and win. Everybody's been asking me all night if I was going to cover this. Yes, I am. All Games reports that Burger King, home of the Whopper and the popular King mascot, will be selling three Xbox and Xbox 360 games for $3.99 US, plus the price of a value meal this holiday season. A representative from Burger King has been quoted as stating, quote, "These are not backward-compatible original Xbox games, but truly designed and developed for each platform separately. There are two versions on each disc specifically made for each platform. This has never been done before in a title," unquote, other than the official Xbox Magazine demo discs. He also stated that there will be achievements in the 360 versions, which was initially rumored not to be true. So here's the three games that you can get for $3.99 at Burger King this holiday season. The first one's Pocket Bike Racer, which the official description is, "In the wild world of Pocket Bike Racing, players race the king and his miniature motorbike crew through the five fun yet challenging speedways. Each track varies in level of difficulty, and players navigate long straights, tight bends, and sharp turns at high speeds while attempting to earn enhancements and tools that they can use as an advantage over opponents." Enhancements and tools, like red shells? Blue spiky shells? "Have it your way customization options allow players to select a bike and a driver and then hit the track of their choice. A Burger King restaurant parking lot, a construction site, a backyard, the King's Garden, or the Fantasy Ranch set. In addition to individual play, four players can race against each other in classic split-screen setup, or eight players can battle it out online on Xbox Live." Awesome. Mario Kart with the King. Big Bumpin'. Looks like a traditional carnival bumper car ride and features familiar Burger King personalities, including the subservient chicken and Brooke Burke, who I didn't realize was a Burger King personality, but okay. There's a catch. Big bumping arenas come with some big hazards, like surprise saws, bottomless pits, and power-up items that let gamers dole out thundering bumps. With several different types of gameplay, gamers have a chance to hone their bumper car skills in a variety of challenging scenarios. The game features five theme parks, including the Icebox, Broiler, King's Court, The Deep, and Monsoon of Doom, and multiple modes of play for each, such as intense four-player and Xbox Live-supported multiplayer. Easy to learn, fun to play, difficult to avoid a major crash. And then the creme de la creme of these games, single-player-only title, Sneak King. Players step into the king's royal shoes and use cunning and stealth to sneak up behind unsuspecting people and bestow them with a delicious meal. The goal of Sneak King is to surprise hungry citizens with Burger King sandwiches and other menu items before they pass out from hunger. Whether in a logging yard, construction site, suburban neighborhood, or downtown urban scene, each rich with detail and hidden pathways, players can hide out and earn points based on how elaborately the delivery is executed. And the screenshot for this is hilarious, with the king in a trash can waiting for this blonde bombshell to walk by so he can surprise her with a tasty meal, just like in the commercials. Like I said, full of awesome and win. According to Q&A with the company, one game will be delivered to franchises on November 19th, with the other two games being delivered in the following weeks, with all three games available until December 24th. In related news, there will be a Dance Dance Revolution BK Kids promotion beginning on December 4th and ending December 31st. This is full of awesome and win to me. This is the kind of advert gaming that I don't mind at all, especially since I know it going into it. And these games might actually be fun. They're actually done by Blitz Games, which did the original Fusion Frenzy, which, as much as people made fun of it, it was fun. And they've also done like some Pac-Man World games, I think. So it's not like some newbie game developer that's come in. It's actually a game developer that does have some title under their belt. And I think it's just, it's hilarious the way that it works, and there's going to be achievements, so, you know, why turn it down for $4? DMN asks, will the king and that dude from the Tender's Crisp Bacon Cheddar Ranch be in the bumper car game? I know the king is in it, because the screenshots show the king in his bumper car with his oversized mask. Not sure about the others. I know, like, the Subservient Chicken, which they have some 3D models of, are on there, and there's some other characters that are in there that you can choose from. Like I said, I'm looking through chat, chat.allgames.com, if you want to leave in your comments. GK128 says that Microsoft recruited Burger King to deliver the death blow of deliciousness to the Wii launch with these games. Clef5 says that if they really wanted to sell food at Burger King, they would lower their high prices. HolyCloud0 says, man, if Sneak King was online Splinter Cell style, that would be so cool. Fifth Dream says that people pay $4 to get ass-raped by a corporation. No wonder the world is the way it is. And Tall Kid tells me that Brooke Burke is in one of the Burger King commercials, and she says, y'all come back now, you hear. So I am actually going to be taking some calls here. So I have opened up both our Vonage and our Skype line. Bobby Blackwolf Show on Skype, 1-866-880-0156. Is our toll-free number here in the United States and Canada. So, GameBrink posted an interview with Shigeru Miyamoto this week, and even though I don't believe that this is any new news, I would be called a fanboy by certain people if I didn't mention it and talk about it. So, the question that GameBrink asked was, looking at the titles that have been announced so far, the pace at which games are being released is comparable to the N64 and the GameCube. So here's what Shigeru Miyamoto said, and this was, I'm assuming, translated from Japanese. Quote, the hardware is basically a GameCube. We've upgraded our development tools to new versions, but you can still use GameCube programs as they are. With that in mind, I thought we would remake GameCube titles for the Wii and modify them to work with the Wii Remote so they can be more fun to play. Unquote. So essentially, this translated to many people that the Wii is a GameCube. The Wii is based on GameCube architecture. Nintendo has been saying that since the very beginning. Kind of like how my Intel Pentium 4 is kind of based on Intel architecture. And essentially what he was saying is that you know, you can use the same development tools on the GameCube to develop for the Wii, just like I can use the same development tools I used when I had a Pentium 3 computer to develop on my Pentium 4 computer. That's the way that I see it, but that's not the way that everybody else sees it. Some people are actually thinking that I'm supposedly no longer supposed to enjoy my experience with the Wii. And we have a call on the line, so I'm going to take this call real quick. Bobby Blackwell Show, you're on the air. Who is this?
Hey, this is Shadowscar from the UK.
Hey, man, what's on your mind?
Oh, nothing, just thinking about the Burger King games.
Uh-huh.
Going back to that.
Yep, so what about them?
Oh, it's just, I thought they were pretty stupid at first, but now I love them.
And nobody's played them. And nobody's played them yet. That's the funny part. All we've seen is a couple screenshots.
I know. But nothing about whether they're going to be anywhere other than the United States, though.
Yeah, I know, and I've heard about that. I mean, I don't know if it is going to be a UK promotion. I'd hope that if it went over well here, that they would expand it. But I haven't heard anything. What are your thoughts on it?
Oh, I don't know. Want to send me a review copy?
I wish I could. I don't. I'm not even getting any review copies. I got to go buy a Whopper like everybody else. So what else is on your mind, man?
Well, what Shigeru Miyamoto said about the Wii, about upgraded GameCube.
Right.
Because I've been supporting the Wii until now, but
okay,
I'm
so
not really sure about it.
Why are you not supporting it anymore?
Because if it's just an upgraded GameCube, why am I going to spend £179?
Okay, and, why? So you think that they should have completely changed architecture?
I guess. Because if I'm going to be paying for the same thing I already have and I don't really play, why would I pay more?
But I mean, that's isn't that the point of? And I mean, I'm asking these questions to try to figure this out. You know, if it's an upgraded GameCube, then it's not what you already have, right?
Mm, right.
I mean, it is. It's not. It's you know, it is a multiplier powerful. Like the chips are faster and they're more efficient than they are in their current GameCube. So I mean, I don't think what he's saying is that it is a GameCube. I think it's based on the GameCube architecture, just like a Pentium 4 is based on the Pentium architecture.
Or we could have this all wrong and it's a mistranslation.
Yeah, and I mean, but I mean, I do believe that it does have GameCube architecture in it, and it is, you know, because GameCube games work on the Wii without any kind of backwards compatibility or anything. So, you know, there is a GameCube in it, in the Wii, but there's also a lot more in the Wii that's other than just a GameCube, which is why I'm so surprised that this is news to people.
I know.
So anything else on your mind, man?
No, not really.
Okay. What time is... You're in the UK, so what time is it over there?
It's 10 to 2.
Wow. Well, thanks for staying up this late to talk to us.
That's all right. I love the show, so... Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
Bobby Blackwell Show on Skype, 1-866-880-0156, if you want to call in and give your opinion. And, I mean, I can understand if some people are feeling that now $250 is too much for something that's based on GameCube architecture. And I can understand that people are like that, but, I mean, you know, I guess the question is, should they have completely changed the architecture and then told their third-party developers, okay, well, you knew how to develop for the GameCube, and now we're going to throw something completely different at you, which is what Sony does. Microsoft didn't do it because the Xbox was built off of DirectX, and the Xbox 360 was built off of DirectX. It's just later, you know, upgraded DirectXs. So that's why I'm kind of wondering why some of that sentiment is out there, and I'm sure I'll get some emails saying that I'm, you know, forgiving Nintendo and that Nintendo can do no wrong, and that, you know, I'm forgiving every misstep that they make, but I don't see this as news because we knew about it before, and I don't see this as a misstep. If it's going to help developers create better games quicker, sooner in the life cycle, then I don't really see the problem with it, but I can understand that, you know, no, it's not going to look like an Xbox 360 or a PS3. Tall Kid says, it is all about the gameplay experience, but I will not pass judgment until I play it, and that's why I think it's a good thing that there are going to be kiosks coming very soon that people can play. We have another call. Bobby Blackwell Show, you're on the air. Who is this?
Good evening, Bobby. This is DMN. How are you?
Hey, doing good. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. I'm calling to counter-argue your previous caller.
Okay.
I think that given the Well, one, inflation. Nintendo has never released a console for $200 up until now.
Mm-hmm.
And also, with what features are being implemented with the Wii, and graphically it looks a little better than the GameCube, I think it's worth the $250.
Okay, now, can we divulge some information about you? Because you're a listener on Orange Lounge Radio.
Yes.
So can you divulge kind of, you know, I know you can't talk about much stuff, but can you divulge, like, where you work?
I work at Nintendo of America as a product tester.
Okay. So you've played it more than me, is what you're saying.
yes. Within the company, we've had a little demonstration, and we were able to have a hands-on interaction with the system, so there are some things I can say. Yes, it does look graphically better than the GameCube, and it clearly it plays differently than the GameCube. I don't see in any way, shape, or form, though, it being anything like the GameCube was. It's taken a complete 180 from what Nintendo's trying to do. They've tried to go with their own, you know, proprietary formats with the cartridges on the 64, with the smaller DVDs on the GameCube. Now they're finally listening to reason, and they have their own. They have a DVD format now, just like everyone else. And I don't see why people are saying, oh, it's just a game, it's just hyped up GameCube, when it's going to be so much more than that.
So what game are you looking forward to most?
Besides Zelda and Super Smash Bros. Brawl, I actually have a thing for WarioWare, so I'm looking forward to that game.
Well, thank you very much. Anything else on your mind?
No, thank you very much, Bobby.
No problem. This is great. We actually have callers tonight. Bobby Blackwell's show on Skype, 1-866-880-0156 is the toll-free number. And for those who still want to get a Wii, like myself, I'll admit it, but you know, I'm sure that there are people that won't. Here's some of the prices according to Engadget. Now, Engadget reported on some of the CompUSA markup sheets. These have kind of the price that CompUSA is paying, as well as the MSRP, the retail price, for the Wii. Now, the Wii console, you and I are going to be paying, as we know, $249.99. These are all U.S. dollars, by the way. $249.99, and they're going to get... CompUSA has to pay $237.50, so it's only like a $12.50 markup that CompUSA will sell for each Wii. The Wii remote control is going to be $39.99, and it costs $32 for the retailer. Wii points card is going to be $24.99, and it's $17 is how much the retailer pays. The Wii Classic controller is $19.99, and it's going to cost $14.50 for the retailer. The Wii Nunchuck controller is $19.99, $14.50 for the retailer. The Wii Game Pack organizer and travel bag, I guess, is $29.99, with the retailer paying $18.95. Wii Rayman Raving Rabbids is $49.99. And it looks like $41.22 is how much the retailer will pay. The Legend of Zelda Twilight Princess is going to be $49.99, with $40 is how much the retailer is going to have to pay. And then Red Steel is going to be kind of like Raving Rabbids, $49.99 with $41.22. And there's actually some other pictures on this Engadget article of cell phone pictures, I guess, from a Target employee leaked. And some of these were colored controller gloves and dog tags and lapel pins. Do you want Wii dog tags? That's the question. That is the million-dollar question right there. So that's kind of the pricing that you're going to go, and how much the retailer underneath gets for each console. So, and then, you know, $12.50 is how much the retailer gets for each console sold. So that is kind of interesting. I don't know anything about retail, so I don't know if that's low or high or whatever. But I'm sure that they're going to love it if more people bought the points card, because they get more money out of that, I think. Or they get more percentage or something like that. Now, Tall Kid says that my only deal with the Wii is that all of these games are short mini-games. The Wii needs more depth game at launch, because when I got my DS, I only got Brain Age and WarioWare, and I had to go get Castlevania because those games did not have enough depth. And def is D-E-P-T-H, not D-E-A-T-H. I just thought I'd clear that up. And that is my only deal with the Wii launch. DMN in chat responds that, trust me, you won't be disappointed. So I want to give both sides there. One last story, and this one goes out to Shadow Slayer, who called in earlier, and as well as Kropotkin. Kropotkin covered this on his news, but I wanted to repeat it here because I got to have a comment from Sony They just have like these index cards or something. Say, what stupid comment can we make this week? GamesIndustry.biz had an interview with Sony Computer Entertainment's worldwide VP, Jamie McDonald, about Sony's worldwide launch strategy for the PS3. Now, remember previously, Sony has stated that they're doing a worldwide launch and that Europe is not a part of the world because they're going to launch in US and Japan, and then Europe will get it in March of 2007. So the question was, what would you say to consumers who like Sony and want to buy your products, but perhaps feel that since they're in Europe, they're always last in line? And this is what he said, quote, "European consumers have shown that historically they don't mind that because they end up buying many PlayStations, if not more, than the U.S. and Japan. In Europe, it doesn't seem that the release of our platforms after the U.S. and Japan in the long run affects how consumers feel." And so the next question was, "Do you think the delay will make much difference to your chances of winning the next gen battle?" And he says, quote, "If we were sitting here in 5 years' time, I don't think we'd really think about or notice that the PlayStation 3 was out 4 to 5 months later in Europe. I think in the long run, PlayStation 3 will succeed because of the great product it is and the great software we make for it." So, by the way, Europe, you're not a part of the world, and you don't mind. That's what I've just gotten out of Sony. You're not a part of the world, and you don't care if you are. Tall Kid says, "Bullcrap. Europe gamers do mind that." And Noir says worldwide launch is a joke. So, yeah, it's going to be coming out in Europe in March, and apparently you guys are okay with that. But he does kind of have a point that in the long run people aren't really going to notice, because I think the PS2 came out later in Europe than it did everywhere else in the world, and nobody remembers that. You know, nobody cares about that because it's the PS2 and everybody has one now. So he does have a point there, but I think that the they don't mind aspect, I think that came out a little wrong, and that is your stupid Sony comment for the week. And Shadow Slayer says, and the Sony guy gets his info from, we don't know. Anyway, that is all that I really wanted to share with you guys. I want to thank Stephen Grenade for the interview, ifcomp.org. I want to thank the other people that called in, DMN, Shadow Slayer, and the girlfriend who had a question about the PS3 or the Wii. So that is all that I want to inflict on you guys this week. All Games Interactive with Scott Rubin and Lawrence Young is live each and every weeknight from the Arena Interactive Lounge in West Los Angeles at 6:30 p.m. Eastern, 3:30 p.m. Pacific, right here on All Games Radio at allgamesradio.com and allgames.com. We will be back again next week on Sunday night at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, here on All Games Radio, allgames.com, so just catch us live and interact with the show directly like what several people did tonight. Feel free to leave us a voicemail with us on any topic, or just leave a bumper for use on the show on our Skype line, Bobby Blackwolf Show, or you can email your thoughts and opinions to me at blackwolf@allgames.com. You can join our official forums at allgames.com to take part in our community. But we would not be able to make the live show work without the chatters. DC Nate, Gita, Hendrix, Hermdog, Necobun, Tedekin, Burning Paper Sun, Doom Plague, Drunk Pandas, Fifth Dream, GK128, Ichiban, Oshi, Refi, Seymour Booty, The Matrix, THK, Toshin, Firecube, RFX, Arimasen, Bacon Bits, BC, Binary 667, Bloodshot Robot, Burr, Citibria, Clef 5, Crispy, DC Nate 2, Dragon Slayer, Engda 59, Gav, Hitstun, Holy Cloud Zero, Interlogic, Just Insane, Kadosho, Mecha, New Shiny CD, Noir, OSU Fan, Sato, Seth 420, CR909, Shadow Slayer, Sparkle Puss, Stone Raider, Sub Z, Tall Kid, The Rob D, Tiger Claw, True, Twinson, VX Jason XV, Who Mike Recon, and Wee Man. So once again, I wanted to thank everybody for participating tonight. It was a really fun show, and check out the Interactive Fiction Competition if you're into that stuff, or check out the Burger King stuff, because the King is great, full of awesome and win. See ya. Bye.
A winner is you. The views and opinions expressed on tonight's broadcast are not necessarily the views and opinions of All Games Productions. This file may be freely distributed provided the original content is unedited and proper attribution is retained. For more information about All Games programming, go to www.allgames.com.
Loyal subjects, do not assume, for assuming makes an ass out of you and maims.